Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. So today we have a fabulous guest called Joe Curtis, who we have a lot in common, Joe, because we share a soberversary date, and it's the 4th of July, so the Independence Day for both of us. We are soberversary twins. We both gave up the booze in a different country, you in Greece, me in Spain, and we will both agree that it is the best thing we have ever done in our entire lives. You're 3 years off it, I'm 8. Joe, welcome to No More Booze. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. And I think this episode came about when I put something up on Instagram and you just left a comment underneath it. And it was just so insightful. And I was like, come on the pod. And here you are.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I'm glad that you reached out.
Yeah, beautiful. So do you want to give the listeners a sense of who you are and what you're all about?
Yes, I'm Joe. I'm 48, nearly 49, so I was 45 when I stopped drinking. I do work full time locally to where I live. And yeah, I've had probably a pretty bad relationship with alcohol since I'd say my mid to late 20s. I did the usual, like drinking when I was a teenager, but yeah, it really took off when I sort of got into wine and cocktails. Always the hard ones though, never the fruity ones.
Isn't that funny? Because we were actually talking about Long Island iced teas the other day.
Yeah.
And I loved Long Island iced tea. Gary never took one because he was like too much alcohol. And I was all long. I remember having a load of them in Manchester, actually, just after we got engaged with a load of our friends. And like, I wasn't able for Long Island iced teas. My brain was, my body wasn't. And actually, that, you know, I have an itinerary of my top 10 worst hangovers in my life. And the day I gave up the booze was number one, but that Manchester thing was number two. So I drank that. Anyway, it was hell on earth that particular day. And then we had to get on a train from Manchester to Rugby the next morning, and I vomited 42 times.
Wow.
On a train. Blech. So there you go. Anyway, you're so welcome. So look, let's get going. So do you want to give us a sense of when you started drinking, what alcohol did for you in your kind of teens and 20s?
Yeah. So I drank probably like most people when I was 18, 17, 18. Went out for, you know, £20 for a night out. And I had a couple of friends that really liked alcohol, and I sort of spent a bit more time with them. But I think it probably became more of a problem when I got married the first time. I think I was 29 then. We broke up only after a couple of years. And I think I sought solace in the wine. I was sort of at the house on my own having to try and sell it, and with our dog at the time. The wine became a bit more of a habit, and I was always the person that was like first at the bar. And I started playing rugby at that time as well, to get myself sort of out and about and improve my fitness and stuff. And yeah, I got really fit, but there was always shots, and there was down in pints, and there was the wine and the cocktails and the tours, rugby tours and everything else. And yeah, it just became a habit that was quite hard to break. And it was quite a strong weekend habit for me, especially because of work. Obviously, I didn't want to be really like drunk in the week, but I did used to drink after work a lot of days. I've got quite a job with that carries quite a lot of emotional weight. And yeah, I think that I started working from home for a bit, maybe in like 2020, 2021. And of course, with COVID, there was nothing else to do, was there? That's when it really, I started to notice it for me that it had been a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you said. And I know a lot of people, and I have a job that takes a lot of emotional weight as well. So you can kind of feel, going back to when you split up, when you were 29, do you find that like talk me through in terms of coping, the emotionality of things, maybe the overwhelm of having to do sell the house by yourself and all that kind of things, and things not turning out the way you expected. It's how we cope with all those because we don't really know.
Yeah, that's it, exactly it. I think we was married when I was 29. I think I was 32 when we broke up, and it was
Okay.
he broke up with me completely out of the blue. It was a massive shock. I was really, really upset, obviously, very emotional about it all. And I'm someone that turns to food for comfort, and it was alcohol as well. And people were, the age-old thing, oh, you're having to go through a really bad time, let's go out for a drink. Or people, friends would come around with a bottle of wine, and that would be end up 2 or 3 bottles of wine. That's how generically I think we, especially as women, it's like, oh well, I'll come around with a bottle of wine and we'll share that. That's part of who we are and how we try and help other people. But it's not until you step away from that you realize that is not how you deal with stuff. You don't mask your emotions and squash them down under a load of alcohol. You have to feel all the feels, as we now know. And I'm actually getting divorced again. I know that makes me sound awful now. That's only been like a month in the making, but it's my choice this time, but it's completely different, and I can feel all the feels, and I thought about it sensibly. And if I'd still been drinking, because drinking was quite a large part of our relationship, my second relationship, and I think I've changed so much over the last 3 years, that's probably been the catalyst for this relationship needing to come to an end. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a huge part of a lot of people's experience when they give up the booze. There's
Yeah.
so much change in it that it begins to change our relationships. We might come back to that as we kind of go along the,
Sure.
and because I think if you're on for talking about that, I just
Yeah,
think that it's
definitely.
so helpful for people because I get that a lot. And in terms of my own lived experience, that's not something I experienced because my other half is not a big drinker. So like
Yeah.
alcohol, he actually, so when we met, my drinking was like way more intense, and then when I met, he really brought me down in terms of the booze because I was much more settled and stuff like that. And I think it's an interesting point what you said around COVID and stuff. And I think there was a lot of articles published post-COVID to say that a lot of people's boozing went up an awful lot during COVID, especially women. And like that, do you now kind of reflectively looking back, what are the things that made like, was it outside influence? Was it boredom? Was it the unexpected? What kind of made you drink more during COVID?
I think for me, it was the boredom, not being able to go out in the week because I still had to go to work every day. My world didn't change in that
Okay.
respect. I still saw my colleagues. I still did my normal job, just slightly differently. But my husband, current, he is a carpenter, and he did not work for a couple of months. So we'd only moved into our house 3 months before lockdown. And behind me, there was an extra bit of the room, but that's been blocked off now. And he made that into a bar. And every night we would come home. What are we looking forward to? The updates on the telly about how depressing everything is. Oh, and a
Yeah.
couple of cocktails. So every evening we started drinking, and at the weekend you couldn't see your friends. So it was like a boozy, Zoom call quiz and chatting to your family and having a bottle of wine. A cup of tea just wasn't going to cut it, was it? And it's that stress that, regardless of the fact I was still going to work, he wasn't working for a time. So there was extra stress on us both. And I think it was a coping mechanism, like it was for a lot of people. And a lot of other people didn't have necessarily the responsibility of going to work, but still, those of us that did, we couldn't go out and let off steam. We couldn't go to the gym. We couldn't go swimming. We couldn't do all these things we were used to doing, meeting up for a coffee. So it was alcohol.
And you know what I think is a really good point to make here? Like, alcohol begins to change our brain, right? It changes every system in our body, right? It really does, right? And I think alcohol rewires like our motivation levels, our the reward pathways of our brain. It rewires like lots of different functions in our brain, but also our decision-making skills as well. So all of these are impacted. We don't realize it at the time. And I think only when we come out of it do we realize the impact. And then sometimes if we go like if our drinking goes further enough down the spectrum, then it's less about choice and willpower, and it's more about like having to incorporate so many other things to help us come off it then, you know? And
It's that interestingly at that time I actually got COVID and I was really, really, really unwell. My mum was a nurse previously, and she was taking my oxygen, and she was like, "I think you're going to have to go to hospital." And I was like, no. And I was so poorly. I've never been so ill in my life. I was crying. I obviously couldn't go to work. I think it was about 2 weeks. I was rough. I broke my ribs coughing. I was so unwell. And I didn't really have my sense of taste and smell. And this is how deep things, bad things have got. So this was 2021. I thought, well, I know if my taste has come back. I know I can't go out, so I will order a box of wine from whatever wine shop it was at the time, and I would drink that wine and see if my taste comes back. I mean, what sort of ridiculous behavior is that? And that box of wine lasted me about 3 days, box of red wine. I didn't have my taste back, but I did drink all the wine. That was me. Oh yeah, this is my way to see if I can get my taste back. Why didn't I eat like a strong piece of cheese? No, I wanted the wine, and I thought, yeah, this is problematic, but I still didn't do anything about it.
But did you have that conscious thought? It is problematic.
Yeah, but I just carried on. Just
And
carried on.
I think, and we were talking about this, you know, because it's so ingrained in the society around us, right? Because everybody gifts wine or it's so socially acceptable, then it doesn't stick out as a sore thumb
No.
as much, you know?
No. And when I hadn't seen people, and you know, when we came out of lockdown and people would come out and come and see you and whatever, they were bringing alcohol around because it was that social socialization in this country, well, worldwide, but in this country especially, is so much around going to the pub, going around someone's for drinks, pre-drinks, which you didn't have that when I was younger. And now it's getting all about getting drunk before you go. Well, we just got drunk before we went out, but now it's pre-drinks and then drinks here and drinks with your dinner and all this stuff. It's like you can't have a good time without alcohol, which of course we know, yes, you can. It's far better.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, myself and Gary went to London for a couple of days at the beginning of the summer, and like supermarkets, so they have is it legislation here, but basically you alcohol isn't on display in a supermarket. You have to go into like a room, go through doors to see it, right? So it's not, whereas we went into like to get a drink in it, like an express little shop or whatever, and I fell over like Prosecco on the way in.
Yeah,
It's everywhere.
absolutely.
It's and then that triggers your brain, and then because everybody, and like I remember we flew into Gatwick, and I when we got the train into London, there was a woman standing beside me, and she was all she was talking about was booze. It was wine this and wine that and barbecue this and barbecue that, and like it's hard to get away from. Not saying like it's the same here, but I just think that little one piece of work that's been done here is not as confronting as actually falling over a bottle of Prosecco when you go into a shop.
No, and it is, and there's all the deals like buy 4 cans, you know, for the price of three, and all this. It's like, why aren't you letting us buy 6 apples for the price of three? Why is it the alcohol? Why is that the stuff that's on offer? But because it's viewed as this joyous, you know, even the alcohol adverts that you see, and it's like, yeah, everyone's having a great time. If the alcohol adverts actually portrayed people being sick in their hair, falling asleep on the toilet floor, not being allowed in a taxi, or falling over in the street and behaving like, God knows what. I don't think that is actually the reality of alcohol, not looking all glamorous and amazing with your martini in your hand.
Yeah, or the Long Island iced tea and then me vomiting 42 times in the urine. So,
Exactly. Exactly.
bleh, like, and then got off the train and then vomited the whole way to Gary's poor auntie's
Yeah.
house. And she was an angel. And she put me to bed.
Oh,
I know.
how many times? I remember drinking so much when I was younger before going out that I woke up and it was 10 o'clock the next morning because I'd fallen asleep at like 7 p.m. at night because I'd drunk so much vodka and orange. I completely missed the whole night out.
Yeah.
And my then boyfriend was like, "Yeah, we just had to leave you here because you were so drunk." I mean, the shame, the anxiety, but
Yeah.
that didn't really come until I was quite a bit older.
Yeah. And so when did it begin to dawn on you? Can you kind of walk us through how that felt? Was it an overnight thing or did it take a couple of years?
So one of my really darling close friends got diagnosed with breast cancer in 2020 when we were in lockdown, and it quickly became apparent that she was not going to survive. And I haven't got kids, and she had two kids and a really supportive husband, and she progressively got worse. And I'd said to her, if you need anything, if it's the middle of the night, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you can ring me, because I'm thinking I haven't got kids to sort out and put to bed. I can just come and I can help you. I can take you to hospital or sit with the children, whatever you need to do. And I thought, I'm saying this, and actually, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I probably wouldn't be fit to drive. From having alcohol or what have you. So I decided to sort of start pulling myself back a little bit, because I did want to be a better friend and I did want to be there for her. But it was my awful hangover. I had a friend round and she'd drunk half a bottle of rum and I'd drunk probably three quarters of a bottle of 70 centiliter bottle of vodka. And the next morning, my parents text me about 10 o'clock and said, "Oh, we're just going to pop in for a cup of tea." And I felt absolutely horrific. Like the anxiety, the racing heart, when you just think it's going to burst out your chest. And I just felt like I was going to die. And I had a cup of tea. My parents came round and I just really held it together. And we had a conversation about whatever. And all I was thinking was, I think this was like a Friday night into a Saturday morning. All I was thinking was, I need another alcoholic drink to stop this feeling that I don't want to, but that's the only thing that's going to stop it. And when they left, I straight away had an alcoholic beverage. And I did feel calmer, but I thought this going forward, this is not sustainable. That needing to have a drink because you've had a drink is ridiculous. And I thought, I don't want to stop drinking altogether. Because I enjoy it and I have a nice time and I like my wine and I like my cocktails, so I'll try cutting down. And I was actually doing Weight Watchers at the time. Ridiculously, most of my points went on alcohol, but I was still overweight. And they had like a dry group on there, and I joined that. And I'd been chatting to some other people, and people were talking about moderation. And this one lady who I'm friends with on Instagram still now, she was always like, "Moderation doesn't work." And I thought, yeah, maybe not for you. It'll be fine for me. I'll be able to do it. And 3 or 4 months of moderation, my friends would be like, "Are you drinking today?" And I was like, "I don't know. Am I? Shall I? Shall I only have three?" And I went on an all-inclusive holiday for like 4 days with the girls. And I would normally be like Prosecco in the morning with breakfast, get drunk around the pool, all of this. And I thought, I'll only drink 2 days out of three. And I'll only have a couple of drinks. Well, I drank 3 days out of, 2 days out of four. I drank 3 days out of four, and I had three or four drinks, which was less than I would normally have. But I thought that was me doing well. And then I went to Greece. And my lovely friend, who was poorly, was more poorly. And I was sending her videos from this walk I was doing every day in the morning to try and get my fitness up. And the day, A couple of days before we left, were due to leave, I got drunk with my friend because it was us and our husbands, and I didn't do my walk in the morning, so I didn't send my video to my lovely friend Charlie, and I felt really bad about it, and I thought, I've got no motivation. I haven't done this simple thing for my friend because I've had too much to drink, and that was the 4th of July. and I never, I didn't drink again. And when I got home, Charlie had been very poorly. She rang me a day after I got back and said, "Can you come and help me and get me from the hospital?" And I went and collected her. And it was exactly 7 days after I stopped drinking. Her husband asked me if I'd go and help him take her to the hospice for a bit of respite. And we both took her. I would not have done that because I probably would have been not motivated, or I would have been hungover, or I would have been drinking. So I drove over there. We took her to the hospice. And unfortunately, she was not there for respite. She died that morning. But she knew why I had stopped drinking. We'd had that conversation, and she was always really supportive. And to have been able to be in a place where I could help her and subsequently deal with her death without alcohol. I mean, I was 1 week sober and Charlie died. And at her wake, she had an open bar, typical Charlie, and our favourite cocktail together was a margarita. And that was what was being served. And I just went, "Mate, come on." So I had my Coke, Diet Coke or whatever. But to be able to have stopped drinking and navigate that time has been one of the most precious gifts that stopping drinking has given me. And I've genuinely never looked back. Sorry, I think I probably rambled there.
No, and that was so emotional. And thanks for sharing. And you know what? I cannot tell you the amount of people that I've helped off the booze, right? Who in, let's say in the month leading up to it, or like, so they've given up and they come back to me and say, "Olivia, this happened and this happened and this happened, and it was the perfect time, and I could never have coped with that had I still been drinking." And it's
Yeah.
like you, like, I know it's only 7 days, right? But like, you then had the clarity, the, and it sounds like it was the same as me, like it'd been coming for a while as well. And I want to draw your attention to what I made a point of. Like, I said actually this to Gary last night, right? Alcohol changed me into a person that I wasn't, right? So like, unmotivated, inconsistent, no integrity, all of these things, right? Okay, so and they were concentrated times in my life. Was I like that all the time? No. But if I wanted to do something, right, let's say I had a goal set and then I went and had wine at the weekend, my goals went to shit, right? So that wasn't me. That wasn't me, right? And that wasn't you. Like, you're not an unmotivated person. The alcohol changed your brain in that way to make you all of those things. And then when you gave it up, you were reliable. You were there for your friend. You were there during her last moments. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think this thing of, you know, we're at fault. We're not at fault. The fucking booze is at fault, you know?
It is. And you, until you've stepped away from it, it's people often say on, I'll say, for example, Instagram posts about not drinking, like, what are the benefits and what do you feel? And it's so hard to, you can tell people, but the feeling of waking up with a clear head, because I didn't really have really bad hangovers, particularly apart from obviously the one I thought I was going to die. I think because I just felt shit all the time. I just had this grogginess about me and this tiredness and this lethargy. And I'd say it was probably like 60 to 90 days after I didn't drink alcohol, and people talk about the pink cloud. And I genuinely, it's like an actual thing. I was like, I wonder if this is what it's like to do LSD when you just feel like so amazing and light and free and like you can do anything. And I was just like riding the crest of this wave of motivation and joy. And I, the wave has got a lot smaller, but I still feel like I'm riding this wave of joy. And I've one of the problems with my current relationship is I have learned, and partly through the death of Charlie, that to find joy in everything, the small things like a sunset, a sunrise. We used to go sea dipping together. Me and our friends, Charlie and I friends, we still do sea dip. and the joy of being able to walk down the road and smell the cut grass and, go for a coffee with a friend. The joy in everything is just so much more apparent when alcohol is not clouding you. I had no joy. That was my problem. The joy had gone for me, and the joy is back now. And there is still, me and my husband, yes, we're getting divorced and it's very sad, but the joy is that we are still friends. We're still in the house together. We can still go. We went out for lunch with some friends on Sunday and it was fine. We can navigate all this stuff. And a lot of that is because I am not this person, this miserable, unhappy person that I was before. I can find the joy in things, and that's just so incredible. And until you actually stop drinking, I don't think you can realize that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as well, like, this is a fucking tangent, right? But myself and Gary are watching this thing called Murder 24/7 on BBC One, right?
Oh
So
yeah, I've seen it.
it's class, right? But the two things that I've observed about watching that, right, when people lose impulse control, there's always savage amount of booze on board,
Yep.
or there's a severe lack of emotional regulation, right?
Yep.
So when, like, so either or. So just back to you then, in terms of, it sounds like this split that you're currently going through is very conscious. Like it's very, like, well thought out, mature, like emotionally regulated. Do
Yeah.
you find that your not drinking has contributed to this, your remaining friends? There's not the heightened sense of it. There's not the maybe bitterness involved, that kind of thing.
Yeah, completely. When we met online actually, and we both used to really enjoy drinking. A lot of our relationship was going out, having drinks, going to like a night, like going to a vineyard for the day, having a nice lunch, loads of wine, all this sort of thing, going out drinking with our friends and drinking at home. But interestingly, actually, my husband had some health problems, and it was like, oh, he might be diabetic or not diabetic, we're not sure. So he himself stopped drinking at home. I continued. But we would have, when we went out and got pissed, we would have like these awful arguments and just be just idiots. He's got a short temper. I haven't really got a temper, but I can F and Jeff with the best of them and be a right twat when I've had a few drinks with him. So not having that, it has allowed me to carefully think through genuinely how I'm feeling, to not overreact to situations. He hasn't done anything, I haven't done anything. It's just I explained to him over the last 3 years, and he knows that it's been 3 years since I've stopped drinking. He doesn't drink very much anymore at all, but I would never expect him to stop. But I said, over the last 3 years, I've grown and changed, and you haven't, and that has pushed us apart. And the reason I've grown and changed for the better is from not drinking alcohol, because it was really hiding the real me and what I was really capable of as a friend and a partner and a human being. And it masked. I've always been an emotional person and supportive of my friends and family, but I am that, but times 100 now. It just. I just feel like I'm a better person for stopping. But yeah, I definitely, this would have been highly emotional, and I don't think we would have been able to be in the place that we are if I was still drinking the way I was. Like, it just would have all kicked off.
Absolutely. And it's so that it's, amicable, that it's calm, that it's
Yeah.
just, two people kind of coming to the conclusion, we've spent our time together, and look, there's other things to explore now.
Yeah, that's really it. And I said to him, we both deserve to be happy. And like I said before, I can find joy in things, and I know that I am quite happy in my own company. And yeah, it's just I probably it sounds so weird when you say to people, yeah, we're still living together and it's all fine, and we're probably going to live here for another 6 or so months until we sell the house. But it's just there is a calmness that I think you can find within yourself again when you stop drinking. I think calm leaves you, because nothing's ever calm, because you're often thinking about when am I gonna be able to go out again? When am I going to be able to order that bottle of wine with my friend and drink more than them so no one realises? And when am I going to be able to get that extra hit of alcohol? And that's all gone. You just get that clarity, that clarity in your mind, and calmness. That's a big deal to me. I'm just so much more chilled.
And it's not even to mention the cortisol levels are raised, and like our stress responses are more alert, and we respond more poorly to stress, and our impulse control is gone, so we're more impulsive. And so I think probably one of the keys for me was educating myself to the point where I think for me it comes from different strands, right? So like when I realized that I live in a world that's very alcohol centric, right? So that's noted, right? Then I live in a world where there's, the health harms caused by alcohol. So I know all of those. I live in my own head, which is maybe negative, or, I have a lot of shame to deal with or whatever. So I constantly need to be reframing my own stuff. Maybe like the trauma people have experienced in their life, they drink because of that. So you have to take that into consideration. And then like, there are so many things, then, the impact of alcohol on our bodies, like we said earlier, all the systems, right? So maybe it's not really us that are making these decisions. It's us plus alcohol, which is, it can't really be trusted, So I think we have to take a lot of things into consideration, and we have to look at it from a very broad spectrum. And what are the things then now that you look back that helped you the most? Like, was it podcasts? Was it sober Instagram? Was it reading books? Was it actually what you said there about the community at Weight Watchers, the dry group, that kind of support, and somebody telling you something, moderation. You can't moderate, and you were like, no, you can't moderate, but I can,
hell no, I kid not. No, she was Helen, you were completely right. I could not.
Yes, moderate. Helen.
yes, thank you, Helen. When I decided it was time, I actually did. I haven't got loads of followers or anything on Instagram, but most of my friends I'm friends with on there, and I did a post saying, just so you all know, this was on the 4th of July in the morning, I've decided I'm not going to drink anymore. I don't know if it's going to be forever. Please don't offer me a drink because I won't want one. Just bear with me. I still really personally enjoy going out to the pub. I love the vibe, and I love sitting out with whatever I'm drinking on a sunny, Saturday afternoon. And I was like, I'll still do all those things. I'll just be me, but I promise I'll be better. And I'll probably remember our conversations that we have, which are the amount of things I've forgotten, that deep, dark chats that people have told me, the shame I feel for not being able to remember those things.
Me too.
Now, I can, perimenopause, I can't remember my own name, but I can remember what you told me 6 weeks ago when you'd had 3 beers and I'd had none. Sober Instagram was amazing, connecting with people like yourself and people from all around the world. Podcasts, I'd never been into podcasts, and I listened to quite a few. Sober Dave was one that really resonated with me. And I read some Quitlet. Is it called the Sober Diaries?
Claire Pooley,
Yes, Claire Pooley's book was the first one I read, and I thought, this is going to be so boring. And I am not a mum, which she is, but so much of what she said resonated with me. And it's not a big thick book, it's quite short, and it's just an honest, truthful account of how it is for so many of us. And it was really helpful. And I did use alcohol free drinks a lot in the beginning, because I still like to cocktail. My iPad is actually on my bar, which has got alcohol free stuff in, which is all dusty because I very rarely drink anything alcohol free anymore. I have a Coke Zero or a sparkling water. The occasional 0% IPA. Through Instagram especially, I went to some meetup thing in Brighton. I'd never go to something like that on my own. That was about 60 or 90 days in. And I went, and I was like, I've got to be all brave. And I met these like-minded women. And that was 3 years ago. And we've got a group chat, and we very occasionally meet up. And I've become quite good friends with a couple of them. And it's lovely. You need that support. I don't think it's something that you can white knuckle. You can't just do it completely yourself with nothing else. You need to get involved in the podcast. You need to get involved in the online community, because hearing from other people, you know, if it's been one day or it's been 1 year, just that extra bit of support just goes so far. And you can share your experiences, because something you might say might really help somebody else.
That's it. And I think, and it's the altruism of it. Like, you don't just help yourself, you actually help others. Mm. And that's the thing. So my day one book was The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, people feel like this. Yeah. Like, people actually consciously give up alcohol, you know. And I think a plan is a good one as well, to have a bit of a plan. Because the first time I did a 30 day off the booze, I was completely derailed by a Singapore sling. I hadn't expected it. It just appeared. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a plan. Whereas if you have a plan for something, like you have a plan for seeing your favorite cocktail on the menu, you have a plan. And we were just talking, somebody I know, they're away at the minute, and somebody sent them a bottle of Prosecco to their hotel room. And like that unexpected thing as well. And people, and we were saying, like, I'd say I was buying alcohol presents for people, like bottles of wine and stuff, when I was 3 years off the booze, until maybe not, I don't know, I can't remember anything. But now I wouldn't buy somebody booze if you paid me, you know. No. So I buy candles, or, you know, whatever. And you were saying you do the same.
I do similar. I do, if I'm out with my friends, I do feel guilty for not buying around, but I'm normally drinking water or Coke, so, and I'm normally driving, so I'm giving them a lift, so they'll buy the drinks, I'll buy like the crisps to go on the table or the snacks. And yeah, buying people alcohol, when you read, I think I never wanted to read about the negative health side effects of drinking alcohol, because I was always like, well, you know, they say that having a glass of red wine is good for your heart. Well, actually, no, that is not exactly it. When you've read about it, you know that that's just BS, don't you? But I always said that to myself, you know, it's all healthy, it's okay in moderation. Well, it wasn't moderation, but so why am I buying? It is actually poison. The alcohol just is poison. But what's the frustrating thing is, when you're trying to stop, or you're thinking about giving up, and you're in the pub and your friend's like, oh, go on, have one more, just share another bottle of wine with me. If you smack it, someone's not going to say, go on, just have another 10 bag. Just stick that in you. It's not going to happen. They'd be like, wow, amazing, you've given up the heroin. That's so good. I'm really pleased for you. But when you say you're giving up alcohol, people are upset. Yeah. People are miffed off. They're like, oh, what am I going to do without my drinking buddy? And you've got to have your excuses mapped out for why you're going to stop. And if initially it's, oh, I'm on some medication and I can't drink with it, then that's fine. But I think you've got to be straight up. And I just say to people that I meet now, they're like, oh, do you want to drink? I'm like, yeah, I don't drink. And 9 times out of 10, they'll question it. Why are you questioning it?
Yeah.
You know.
And you know what as well? There still is an awful lot of stigma around it. Like, somebody said to me very recently, they were like, but did you have a problem? Like as in really worried. And there was the sweetest conversation, like really worried for me. And I was like, well, I didn't have the problem that we consider a problem. Mm. But it was a fucking problem. Like, vomiting 42 times in a train toilet is not unproblematic.
Yeah.
You know, forgetting being in a bar for 6 hours is not unproblematic. Yeah. Like, that's problem behavior. Do you know what I mean? Having so much shame that you literally want to sleep for the day. That's a problem. Like, these are all problems. So, like, okay, I didn't, you know, crash the car, or I wasn't drinking every day in my life, but alcohol was causing a lot of problems. So it was a problem, like.
Yeah. And it's that thing, isn't it? People, and I think sometimes people want to question your choices because they're not so happy with their own, and you will, a lot of people probably find this when you go into moderation or stopping, trying to stop drinking or stopping altogether, someone will ask you about it, your friend, and they'll say, well, I only drink at the weekends. Yeah, I only used to drink at the weekends when I was younger, but I used to drink 5 bottles of wine on Friday, you know, between Friday and Saturday night. that's problematic. It doesn't matter whether you don't drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And people wouldn't, I think, maybe they're questioning their own drinking. You know, well, I can just have one, and I can just do it. Well, yeah, you know, that's great for you. I know that I can't just have one. Yes, I don't always call myself sober. I call myself alcohol free because I don't feel like I was an alcoholic. But as you've said, alcohol did not come without its own problems, deadening my feelings, making me feel unwell. I had high blood pressure, which that sorted itself out. I stopped drinking, got motivated, joined the gym, lost weight. Granted, I then found my sweet tooth about 6 months in, which I'd never had. I haven't lost it, but I'm still a much healthier than I was when I was drinking alcohol.
And I think that's so common that people find the sweet tooth as well because of the dopamine. Like, we love a bit of dopamine, don't we?
I was so frustrating. I was never really into sweet stuff. It was always cheese and crisps. Now it's cheese and crisps and something sweet afterwards.
And it's funny, you know, when you're in a restaurant or whatever, and like the dessert menus come down, and I usually wouldn't be like, whereas when I gave up the booze, I was like, well, sure, I deserve a dessert now because I've had no alcohol.
I was always a starter and main, and now I'm a starter and main and a dessert. All my dessert used to be an espresso martini back in the day. So it was a little bit wild. But
So it sounds to me like your life is exactly where it needs to be in terms of joy, in terms of personal development, in terms of all of these gorgeous things that have happened to you. Like, and you said it's the best thing you've ever done. Do you want to maybe expand on that just a little bit? Just, you know, I know and you know, we're this side of the alcohol, right? So we're the lovely side where we're developing more confidence in ourselves, we're more consistent, we're able to do more, like our life has improved about 1,000,000%. Like, you put into words what it has done for you over the last 3 years.
How can I put it
I
into
know.
words? It's just so hard to describe. It's just, for me, I think it's just the I've spoken about the calmness that comes over you. Finding peace actually is another thing. You can find your peace. You spoke about stress levels and cortisol and all those things, and my job is really stressful, and I have at times felt very, very stressed. But being able to manage and deal with that stress through other things by going for a walk or going to have a coffee with a friend, decaf, obviously, perimenopausal, and that is a big thing for women of a certain age. I've gone into that stage, and you get a lot of interrupted sleep and everything else. Well, yes, I do have that, but I know it's not as bad as it would have been. I had interrupted sleep when I drank alcohol all the time. Just being able to deal with your emotions, feel your feelings. And I think, again, touch on something you said about it. It's not you, it's the alcohol that's changed you. I think you become your authentic, true self without that mask of alcohol. I have always loved being the person that gets up, gets on the dance floor, has a laugh with my friends. And the first time I went to like Butlin's Big Weekender, little advert there, with not drinking alcohol. The first time I've been, I got really drunk, and the second time I was not drinking, and it was hard. So it was 2 months in, and the alcohol-free options were really poor. But I thought, no, get up there, get on the dance floor, do exactly as you did before, but as you, not with the mask of alcohol. And I did, and it was great, and I had a great time. And my friends say to me, "You are just the same as before, but better." And that's really probably the best thing that's come out of it for me. I'm me, but better. I'm like me 2.0, because I feel better. I look better, a little bit of reverse aging with the coming off the booze. And I think I'm a better friend, a better daughter, not necessarily a better partner, as I've disclosed, a better workmate. I can take on more things at work. I can feel better about things, get less stressed. There is no one, I've never heard anyone say, "I wish I hadn't given up drinking." There is nothing to miss. There genuinely is nothing to miss.
No, and once you get used to it and you begin to feel comfortable in your own skin and all that kind of stuff, it is literally like it's it, and this is available to every single person who listens to
Yeah.
this podcast. It
And you
doesn't
got
discriminate.
no, and find your people. I would never have met some of the girls that I've met that through not drinking. I would never have come across them in normal daily life. We're very lead very different lives, do very different jobs, but to have that support, it's really something that is, I think, is difficult to do on your own. And even if that support for you is only like coming onto an Instagram page like yours, and reading through the comments, you don't have to comment straight away. But people, when people say like, "Oh, I'm 15 days sober," or "I haven't drunk for a week," and people are clapping and cheering on, and it's just such a lovely place to be. It's there's just nothing negative, and I think that support is absolutely key for people, and it is there if you want to find it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Joe, I have loved our conversation. You're so honest, you're so truthful, you're so yourself. And I just think that having ordinary voices, like we're all ordinary, right? We all have our lives, like and it enhances every aspect of our lives. And it mightn't happen today or tomorrow, but it's again to get all of these things, to gather as much information, to talk to as many people as you can, to be as truthful with yourself as you possibly can. And that's the key to beginning to realize it and then untangle from the culture that we all find ourselves in.
It is, yeah. We're so it's the narrative of alcohol is just pushed on us from a young age that's the only way to have a good time. But trust me, there are 6 million other ways to have a good time and feel great at 6 a.m. in the morning when you wake up and you get so much more time, don't you?
Oh my
Where
God,
does all the
the
time come
time.
from? It's amazing. It's that's
Absolutely.
no one ever tells you that, but you
No
get
one
so
ever tells you. So
much
the
time.
time has allowed me to have a full job, a full-time job, raise two kids, do a weekly podcast, coach loads of people, do three courses, like university level courses. What else? A couple of business accelerators, all in the last 4 years. That's all I've done. Do you know
That's
what I mean?
that's
And
unbelievable.
not, like, have a nervous breakdown in the meantime. Now there's been pockets of that, but do you know what I mean? Like you're able, and I talk a lot about in the groups that I do, the window of tolerance. Like your window of tolerance expands so much more that you're able to tolerate more in your life. You have the bandwidth for coping. And even just the physical removal, and you talked really eloquently about that, like you calmer, more peaceful, all those things. You don't have to do anything. They just naturally come.
Yeah, they do, yeah. And you do, I try not to be preachy with my friends, but they'll still be like, oh, I've got a really bad hangover and I can't do this and I can't do that. And I'm like, I want to stand on the rooftops and scream about how amazing not drinking is, how wonderful it is to wake up on Sunday morning for me, go down to the beach, have a little dip in the sea, grab a coffee with a friend, walk the dog. Just do all these things that I wouldn't have done because I was stealing time from myself by being, relying on alcohol to get through things. And yeah, we haven't got that long here, have we? And I feel confident that if I was ever in Charlie's situation and my life was going to be prematurely cut short, I would be satisfied to know that I've done the best for me and made the most of this amazing opportunity that we've got to have a life. So, yeah.
Fuck me. And literally, isn't that all that we can ask for?
Yeah.
That there's no regrets and that
Yeah.
you're living your life on your own terms.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Definitely.
Oh, fab.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jo. Come
Thank
here.
you.
If people want to get in touch or if you want to share your details, do you want to do that now?
Oh yeah, I'm on Instagram, and I want to say my name is X Jolene XX,
I think it is. I will.
Jolene. Yeah, X Jolene XX. It's a private account, because of work, but you can DM me, and I'd always be happy to help and encourage anybody because it is the best. I've been to so many places in the world and had some amazing times, but the best journey has been the one to being alcohol free.
Yeah, and I completely second that. And if anyone is any way curious, just do it. And like you said, for 60 or 90 days, sure, what's the worst that could happen? And as we both know, we've never met a sober forward slash alcohol free person who actually isn't mad about it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Exactly. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much.
And if this episode has made you think a little differently about your relationship with alcohol and you're ready to make a change, I would absolutely love to help you. Head on over to greyareadrinker.ie where you can find all of my upcoming programs, book one-to-one coaching, or take my No More Booze Roadmap. That's my alcohol audit that's designed to help you understand your drinking, identify your patterns, and figure out what your next steps could be. If alcohol is taking up more space in your life than you'd like, maybe this is the route to go. So head on over to greyareadrinker.ie and let's get you on the road to a life that's packed with more energy, more clarity, and of course, no more booze. No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.